What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Fast Friday podcast on Sikkim365.com. I'm Craig Smoke, host of UNR, weekdays 12 to 3 on ESPN Central Texas, and of course, Sikkim365.com team reporter. Joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver, director of broadcasting, also recruiting reporter, team reporter. And we come to you following a 35-31 Baylor victory over Oklahoma State last Saturday on homecoming, and now. Now it's time for a pretty big challenge, and that is Iowa State at their place in Ames on Saturday afternoon. But before we get into previewing Iowa State, we'll take a little bit of a look back at last week. How can we not talk about what was the biggest victory so far of Matt Rhule's time at Baylor? And then we'll preview Iowa State. Then we'll get into some questions from the board, and we'll close it on out this week with our just Big 12 predictions on the games this weekend. But 35-31, Baylor gets a surge with Charlie Brewer in at quarterback in the fourth quarter. They also had a lot of big plays along the way. And really what it boiled down to for me, Grayson, was a rant that I had like maybe a month or so ago. Maybe it was a little bit longer than that. But when frustrations were kind of building early on in the season, although they started off 3-1, but there were still frustrations just because they didn't look as good as they should have looked or whatever the case may be. And then, of course, they've taken a couple just directly on the chin. But ultimately, players have to make plays. And I thought the coaching staff had a good game plan in place on Saturday on both sides of the ball. I thought that they made some really good decisions as far as when they tried to break out some trick plays. Now, they didn't necessarily convert them, but I think the timing of it was great. I think the coaching staff did a great job on Saturday. But I think the most important thing was that a bunch of players just jumped up and made plays, whether it was Jalen Hurd or it was Chris Miller or it was Treston Ebner or Charlie, or Denzel there at the end with a catch that will go down in Baylor history, I have no doubt about it, especially if this season continues on an upward trajectory. A lot of guys just made plays when they needed to, and that's how they won that game. They didn't win that game because of scheme. They didn't win that game because Oklahoma State had more penalties. That helped. But ultimately, they won that game because a bunch of guys made plays on Saturday.
Yeah, and just kind of piggybacking off of that, they finally got some explosive plays.
Yes.
And I think that kind of changed the football game. I count, you know, a punt block return for a touchdown as an explosive play. I felt like that definitely was Christian Morgan once again coming through on special teams. That was one. John Lovett touchdown right before the end of the third quarter, right after Oklahoma State had scored a touchdown. One play, 75-yard. Baylor hasn't had plays like that all season long, so to get one, like you said, that's a guy making a play, and that was such an important play. And, you know, to go 75 yards in one play and not have to grind out another drive was huge. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, down the stretch, Charlie made that, you know, really weird throw on a weird route to Jalen Hurd that, you know, Jalen caught it, you know, broke a couple tackles, ran for a touchdown, 36-yarder, another explosive play for a touchdown. So, for me, my takeaway was that they found some explosive plays, and maybe they found, you know, a recipe for some explosiveness going forward, because I do believe they're going to need that in a couple of these games going forward, especially against an Iowa State team that is not going to give up very many plays. So, you know, when the play is there, you got to be able to go make a big play. And so I think that Baylor showed they can do that at times. And, you know, I was impressed, like you said, with the game plan as well. I felt like the defense was able to, you know, they gave up a lot of yards, but it's kind of what Phil Snow has talked about. It was bend but don't break. They didn't give up an absurd amount of points. You know, 31 to, you know, one of the best offenses in the Big 12 is really not that much. And it gave Baylor a chance to win. And, of course, the defense came up with, you know, probably outside of the Denzel Mims catch, the biggest play of the game with the Chris Miller sack.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's hard to even to say there was one big play or what the biggest play was. I mean, ultimately it'll be Denzel Mims having what you hope is a coming of age moment for him, because he's not nearly as good as he should be. He's just not. But he shows flashes of how good he can be. And apparently the way he talked after the game, he at times is dealing with confidence issues, and you know, he's had a couple games where his hamstrings bothering him or whatever, but I hope that game showed him like how important he is to this team. Instead of Matt Rhule just telling him over and over and over again how good he can really be if he just does everything he's supposed to, maybe he can realize that even further now and even more fully now and say to himself, like, I have no reason to lack confidence. I'm one of the best receivers in the entire country if I just play hard and play smart and play my game. And You know, at times I think we've seen him be a little soft, or at times we've seen him just kind of disappear. And the reason why that's so frustrating is because you know what he can be and what he has been at times in big games for them. And so no moments leading up to what was a huge moment, like a moment that when you walk through the hallways at Baylor or at the new facilities, if they are fortunate enough to be able to build those here pretty soon, and you see like all these big plays from the past, I feel like the Denzel jump up and grab is going to be a part of those plays, because that was a huge victory at home on a homecoming where the stadium was as packed as it's been probably in a couple of years. I just think the atmosphere was fantastic, and we kind of expected that with homecoming, but you just never know. But there's no doubt the crowd came into play on Saturday. Everybody stayed to the very end, and they got themselves a treat by doing so. But yeah, Denzel, just a monster play. But you know, Jalen's play was a monster play. Christian Morgan's block and Ebner's scoop was a monster play, because everything mattered in that game. Every single little thing mattered a ton. So to get a few of those different types of plays and really that be the difference in the outcome was, I think, really huge for this team.
Yeah, I was also really impressed with Charlie just being able to come in the game and make the kind of impact he did. I was a little hesitant. You know, when they brought him in, it was kind of like Jalen was moving the offense a little, but not really doing a whole lot. And you kind of felt like they were going to lose that game if they just kind of stayed the way they were. And I know if Jalen is in the game and he hands it off to Lovett, it's probably the same result, but it wasn't him handing it off. It was Charlie. And so, you know, his first play went for a touchdown, and I just was shocked that he was able to come in that game and just kind of do what he's been doing all year outside of that West Virginia game, and just, you know, kind of put on a show and lead Baylor back. And it was really cool to see, you know, a guy being that ready and that mentally focused after sitting for, you know, three quarters pretty much, mm-hmm. and being able to come in, and Coach Rhule having the trust that he was ready, you know, to come in regardless of how many first team snaps he got during the week or whatnot. But that was really impressive. And I think he kind of showed the reason why we've all thought, you know, he is the guy. And this is the second time he's been given the opportunity. Well, third, I guess, with the Texas game, but second time at home, he's been given the opportunity to lead a game winning drive. And he's done it both times, against K-State and then against Oklahoma State. And I know the Texas game, he came up short, but he's shown this ability to just come through when it matters most. And that's a big quality to have in a quarterback, and one that I don't think Baylor fans should take for granted, because that's very lucky to have someone like that.
Yeah, man, he has that it factor. There's no doubt about it. He's got that clutch gene as well, and he's played in a lot of big games. I mean, he played in a lot of big games before he ever arrived at Baylor, bigger games than most high schoolers ever play in, and he just has a very cool hand. He's calm and steady. He doesn't get too amped up about anything, but you got to see him with the views of the Brazos video get a little fired up when Verkedrick Bonds came and congratulated him on the sideline after that touchdown to Mims. And, you know, we saw it in the locker room in the little clip that they posted as well, him dancing with Jalen McClendon a little bit. So he's got that about him, but I think he only probably shows it to those closest around him. But in general, you know, he's just cool hand Luke. He's unbelievable with some of the situations he gets put into, that he's able to find ways to make it work. And, you know, those runs that he had that Jalen probably wouldn't be able to do, you know, moving the chains and just giving them an opportunity to keep moving the football was gigantic. I mean, I'm with you. They don't win that game if Jalen McClendon stays in at quarterback. I was getting frustrated with the number of times I felt like they had plays there for the taking and he just didn't see a receiver or didn't even look that way. Jalen, that is. I can think of like two or three off the top of my head, not to mention the terrible interception in the end zone that I just don't know what he saw there. He saw something unlike the other instances, but I don't know what it was, because that looked like a pick all day long. But I thought Jalen had a very important play on their first touchdown drive of getting stuffed at the goal line, but then just continuing to turn forward and get in, because he got stopped initially. There's no doubt about it, and got a little help from his buddies as well. But that was an important drive, and so that's what I mean. Everybody contributed. Even if he didn't have his best game, you know, Charlie didn't have his best game either. We'll think of it that way, but he really didn't necessarily. But everybody from the start to the finish had a hand in that game. And had a, you know, had a big role. So I thought it was a tremendous team win, a team win all the way. across the board. And while it was not perfect and it wasn't always pretty, that was something that they haven't always been able to do, which is climb out of a hole or, you know, come back from behind late in the game and put up not just you're trailing by three, but you're trailing by double digits, and you in 5 minutes went and turned that game completely on its head. And so I think that was huge for this team's confidence, and I also think it was huge for the fans. You know, I put out a tweet a couple of weeks ago, the night of the West Virginia loss, and I said along the lines of, you know, don't let the highs get too high and the lows get too low, because everybody was so down in the dumps after that West Virginia butt whooping that this team still had a lot to play for. And it got some traction. It got like 200 likes or something like that. But I could tell there were still a lot of people that were like, oh, whatever. I think those people are even looking up after this past weekend and going, okay, wait a second. You know, like, that can happen. You can go get whooped in Morgantown, but turn around and bounce back. And that was the good sign as well. They didn't keep the losing streak going. They bounced back in a big way. They came from behind. They got contributions from all three phases. It was just a great win. And they did so, like I said, in front of a crowd who I've been hard on at times that was there for homecoming, obviously, but maybe sort of realized if they hadn't been back in a while of how fun it can be and how much they matter as well in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, absolutely, and they definitely mattered on Saturday. I think
that energy was needed.
It was awesome, yeah, and the helmets were awesome. I felt like...
Yeah, Sailor Bear looked cool.
Yeah, I felt like everyone was out there, you know, ready to cheer on, you know, the Bears a little bit, and it showed. It helped them a ton, and, you know, I just wanted to talk about some of the guys on defense because I felt like it was a coming out party of sorts for a couple of the guys on defense. Obviously, Clay Johnston played his best game maybe ever. I mean, he was flying around all over the field. He finally looked healthy. I mean, he was running down Justice Hill. It felt like every time Justice Hill got the ball, he finished with 17 tackles and 14 of them were solo. So he had an incredible game. He was Big 12 Defense Player of the Week. So he was awesome. I felt like Raleigh Tejada once again was very good in what the defense wanted him to do. He was playing soft coverage, playing off, and Oklahoma State was throwing it over there, but he wasn't allowing the receiver to get anything after that. They didn't give up big plays over the top because of that, and it really helped them stay in the game and force Oklahoma State to drive and drive down the field and force Cornelius to be extremely accurate all game long.
Which
so,
he's not.
No, he's not, and that was a great strategy by the Bears. I felt like Ira Lewis finally got in on the action a little bit. He finished with four tackles. He got in. It says point half a sack, so I guess he didn't get the full sack. Yeah, exactly. And it was, I believe, his first of the year, maybe second. It hasn't been many, and so I felt like he played really well. And then a special shout-out to Bravion Roy because he played the best game I have seen him play since being at Baylor. I felt like he was living in the backfield finally as a guy that – probably should have gotten a red shirt when he first got to Baylor, and it seems like maybe he's starting to turn the corner a little bit, and he looks like a guy that, you know, as the season progresses and going into next year, could be a really, really big contributor for this team, and finally, because he has all the attributes to do it. So I was really impressed with him, and, you know, there were others. Blake Lynch played solid. Chris Miller, 8 solo tackles.
Chris Miller needs to be mentioned
around.
For sure.
Yeah, and so I felt like the defense as a whole had a great scheme. They stuck to their assignments, and they really didn't give up many explosive plays outside of that Justice Hill swing pass that went for a big game. But other than that, they were able to kind of keep everything in front of them.
Still think sideline to sideline, they're a bit slow. And it's just concerning to me how fast the other team looks when they get around the edge, because Baylor doesn't have anybody in the area. Just forget about it. But they were much better and much more sure tackling. That's something that now that it's happening a little bit more, and granted it's just this past game, but it's happened at times and you just kind of take it for granted. But when it doesn't happen, then you rail on it, and that's just tackling, just form tackling or just getting guys down. They did a good job of that, like you said, because otherwise Oklahoma State breaks tackle, they break loose, and there's another explosive play. I was frustrated by the coverage early on until I kind of realized what they were doing, but I was thinking that it was awfully reminiscent of the OU Baylor game when, you know, Stoops had his corners playing 10 yards off of Corey Coleman and company, and they just 10 yards, 10 yards, 10 yards. That's kind of what it felt like at times, but it makes sense. You know, once you realize what they're doing and you see the result of it, it made a ton of sense. Yeah, go ahead, Tyron Johnson, have 10 yards, but we're not going to let you have 70. And yeah, you made a good point about the fact that they had to drive, they had to work for their yards, they had to grind those yards out. And yeah, it was a great game plan by Phil Snow. Still a lot to get better at, obviously. I think the linebackers have a long way to go as a unit, but Clay Johnson was fantastic. And it seems like they're kind of figuring things out. You know, the last month of the season last year, they played their best defense. Maybe this is a sign of things to come. They'll obviously have a huge test this weekend against a three-headed monster on offense of Purdy, Montgomery, and Butler for the Cyclones. But maybe we start to see that, and if that's the case, then it's coming at the perfect time because they need one win. But if you can get two, maybe even three, and I'm not going to go crazy here, but win two out of the last three, really just one's what matters most because you can get those extra bowl practices. But if the defense is starting to click, it'd be great to see that.
Well, thank goodness you don't have to go to Norman or to West Virginia.
Right.
Because
You already did that.
Yeah, you already did that. And so those two are out of the way. The rest of the schedule is not, in my opinion, it's not offenses that should be able to put up, you know, those kind of numbers. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, they haven't done it all year, really. But yeah, a great win. And like you said, I think they're starting to play their best football, and they're going to have to carry that to Iowa State because I think they have a really unique opportunity to kind of control the game a little bit, kind of like they did against Texas. I think Iowa State has a good offense, not a great offense. And I think Baylor could be able, if they can stop the run like they did against Texas for the most part, then they should be able to have some success. And, big receivers, you know, Colin Johnson gave them some problems against Texas. So Akeem Butler will probably give them a little bit of problems. But as long as when he catches the ball, you're tackling him, that's all you can hope for because no one else has been able to do that. Everyone else is trying to, you know, arm tackle him when he catches the ball, and then he's just stiff-arming dudes and throwing them to the ground and running for an extra 30 yards. And
that was a heck of a highlight versus Kansas last week of him just throwing dudes to the ground.
I mean, it's like
Literally, physically throwing guys to the ground.
Yeah, he's a big-time receiver, and he's going to be one that I'm sure they're going to key on, and he's by far their best receiver. Other guys are just they're okay. I wouldn't say they're supremely talented. Montgomery's a great running back. Their offensive line is just okay, though. So if you're able to just, you know, not allow him to get in the open field, you can have some success. And freshman quarterback, you never know what you're going to get. So hopefully Baylor can rattle him a little bit on Saturday.
Just a huge win last Saturday. They're already over it, though. We talked to Matt Rhule already this week, talked to players, and there's no doubt they definitely enjoyed it. But they enjoyed it for like a day and a night and had fun, I'm sure, around Waco on Saturday and got back to the grind. And they've been pretty focused this week. But, man, it's such a tough challenge that's in front of them. But again, just any more thoughts on Oklahoma State before we kind of start previewing Iowa State a little bit more?
Not really, but it was the biggest win of the Matt Rhule era. I don't think there's any question about that.
I think it was so big that it's kind of been talked about so much now, and everybody's relayed is how happy that made them feel. But I just think it was huge to do that in front of your home crowd. It was huge to have a crowd like that. It was huge to just show everybody involved like what it was like and what it can be like and kind of what they want it to be ultimately. You know, that wasn't the prettiest game, but they found a way to win and grind it out and played physical and played good defense when they needed to and got explosive when they needed to. I think that's not the prettiest way that they'll want to see it, but that was pretty much what they're going for, is explosive plays on offense and get physical and nasty on defense. And the only thing really missing was creating turnovers, but they were able to somewhat do that in the special teams, and so special teams has come along now. Bravion Roy also had that blocked field goal, so that was a huge, huge play, although the wind had a few blocked field goals on Saturday as well for both sides. But, yeah, Bravion's coming along. You're seeing Chris Miller come along. So a lot of guys who are just kind of waiting on. John Lovett, another one, that, okay, now it's starting to make sense and fall into place a little bit more. And I think a lot of detractors are still going to be detractors, because until like Baylor wins a Big 12 title, that's just where they want to be. But I think there's a few people out there that maybe kind of toeing the line, and they see that West Virginia game, they're like, nope, this ain't going to work. They're now going, okay, yeah, maybe it's going to work. It's just, you got to realize how tough it is playing Morgantown. You got to realize how young this team still is, and they got to realize they can't be a yo-yo every week either of big loss, you know, big loss, big win, big loss. You don't want to go about doing things that way either. But I think this will be a nice that was a nice building block game, a nice foundation for this program, not just this team, but this program moving forward.
Yeah, and on the Oklahoma State side, I just wanted to mention how weird is it that they really struggle when they come to Waco.
I don't know what that's about.
Yeah, they lost to Baylor in 2016, and as we know, that ended up not being, you know, a great Baylor team. And then this year, you know, two, you know, right around bowl eligible teams for Baylor got to win, you know, somehow. And, you know, Oklahoma State's been rattling off 10-win seasons like crazy, but for some reason, when they come to Waco, they have struggled. So I found that, you know, kind of interesting that that just continues to happen. But one thing I wanted to mention about what Coach Rhule said today was that, you know, he mentioned that for some reason this team is really good after a loss.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, after a win, for some reason, you know, they get comfortable and get, you know, complacent a little bit. And Coach Rhule made it clear that he's not comfortable this week. And he feels like that's weared off onto the players a little bit. And he said that this week of practice so far has been really, really good, just like it was for the Oklahoma State game pretty much. Now they got one more tomorrow, but it's been a good week. So I expect Baylor to come out and really have a good game plan and not be that same comfortable team that walked into Morgantown and into Norman recently. So
yeah, he didn't really have an idea of why they had a little bit of a letdown in Morgantown. He said that, you know, it was kind of started to get the sense that something was a little off, that they had let up a little bit, I guess, after that Thursday practice before. Well, I guess they would already been out there practicing on. Okay, no, so it wouldn't have been a Thursday practice or whatever. Like, I guess it would have been a Tuesday practice, whatever it was before they left, that he kind of got a weird feeling about sort of their attitude and their. Not. Attitude's probably the wrong word. Just the kind of the feel. They didn't like the vibes that he was getting necessarily. He feels like this week, to your point, they got that edge to them. He's all about edge. He wants edge all the time in everything that they do. And he feels like they've got a little bit of that edge, that they do play better when, you know, they're not expected to do much of anything. And they're maybe getting a little bit disrespected. Not that Iowa State's doing anything to disrespect them, but I think most people are picking Iowa State to win this game. So I think going there feeling like there's not any pressure on them. They're going into hostile territory. And they're going to need some edge to win a game in Ames, Iowa. There's no doubt about that. So it seems like practice has gone well. A couple of notes from that. Graylin Arnold still hurt. And Matt Rhule just matter-of-factly, and I tweeted this out from his Monday press conference, but today he said a little bit more matter-of-factly that it's looking like Graylin Arnold's going to redshirt, which would mean that next year he would be a junior like he was supposed to be this year. But he played in four games exactly before the injury. Oklahoma State was being targeted as his maybe comeback game. Well, last week came and went, and we didn't see Graylin Arnold. And now this week he's talking about going ahead and just redshirting, which, hey, after this week, there's only two games left. Maybe a bowl game, but only two games left. I think that's pretty huge. It's not ideal the way that's working out for Graylin, probably in his mind, but if they are able to convince him that that's the right move and, hey, just get fully healthy and we'll be fine with Derek Thomas and Raleigh and Jameson and everybody else there, you just get 100% healthy and get ready for spring. I think that's a huge like bonus for this team because he would have been back next year. He was never going early to the NFL, ever. And I don't even know what kind of an NFL guy he would even be at 5'9", or 5'10", stretching it. But he is a very good college corner when he is healthy. Unfortunately, the last couple years, he really hasn't been. So I think it's big to have Graylin Arnold getting that red shirt this year and getting that extra year back.
Yeah, it's great for him, and it's great for Baylor, too. I mean, you want to talk about a position that has kind of been looked at as a need, for especially for recruiting purposes. That cornerback position is one that, you know, we've talked a lot about it. I mean, you know, they've been, you know, on the search for a cornerback, and, you know, having Graylin back for next year, and then you got him for another year, that kind of, you know, puts that position a little bit at ease, I would think. I think that definitely helps, especially with the emergence of Raleigh Tejada. He'll be there for two more years. Kalen Barnes has looked solid. He's still not there yet, but he's a true freshman. Mm-hmm. So you got him for, you know, at least two more, maybe three more. And so
Most likely three more.
But there's a lot of depth that is being built there by him, you know, possibly redshirting. And I would love it if he could redshirt, and, you know, with him possibly redshirting, Jared Atkinson possibly redshirting, and then, you know, of course, Gavin Holmes probably redshirting, getting a medical redshirt as well for next year, I would think. So there's a lot of, you know, somewhat older guys that, you know, are getting that opportunity. And there's a few on the team that I wish could get that opportunity.
Which Bravion Roy could.
Exactly, yeah. He'd be a perfect guy for it, but they clearly need him too much. But, You know, there's a lot of guys like that. B.J. Thompson would be another one, but
Christoph Henley.
I know. Yeah, there's so many that you wish it could be. So I'm happy that Grayland is a guy that, you know, it's working out for him to do that, because he could use it and he could be a superstar next year. And we know that. We've seen him play really good in games. Now it's just about getting consistency at the position and keeping his body healthy. But yeah, good news, I think, for Grayland and for Baylor football moving forward.
For sure. So that's what it's looking like. A red shirt for Grayland Arnold, a red shirt for Jared Atkinson. We kind of already floated out there previously, and he's not been playing since playing in the first four games. So that's been pretty clear. And given the way the offseason went for him, that just makes sense. Like, let him get a little taste of football, get back out there, and then, hey, now we shut it down. We don't shut it down, but shut down your playing time, and you'll be full meal deal with a red shirt now under your belt coming up next year and have a couple years to just play free and loose. But you mentioned Gavin Holmes, that unfortunate news that came out earlier this week that he tore the ACL in the same knee that he tore last year. He did so in practice, I guess it was on Monday, and just jumped up, came down awkwardly, heard a pop, and that ends his season before it really even got started. He did see some time on special teams on Saturday. Nothing that stood out, obviously, but was just getting his toes back in the water, dipping them back in, and just like that, a couple days later, after that long wait to get back out there, he's back on the shelf with the same knee, with the same injury for the most part, and we won't see him probably at all next year because, I mean, it lines up to be nearly a year to the day that he tore it the first time around, and he's just not coming back. I know that he was technically ready to come back maybe a little bit earlier, but just with the redshirt rule, it made sense to go ahead and wait till the very end these last four games. But I just ultimately, they'll figure it out on the football roster side of things, and he'll rehab for the next year and get surgery and all of that. But I just hate it for him, knowing how hard he's worked. I've talked to his father before and know, like, the money they poured into just rehab and things like that, and the care and love they poured into it as well, the support. It just stinks, man. It's part of the game, but just he was such a bright spot before he got hurt last year. Like, he really looked like he was going to be a really, really good receiver, and he still can be, but he'll have to do so after suffering two torn ACLs in the same knee over a two-year window.
And that's very tough. Yeah. We've seen how tough that has been for, you know, a lot of players. One notable one is RG3.
Yeah.
You know, when he tore his that second time, you know, he wasn't quite the same. So I'm hoping Gavin, you know, he's a younger guy, so, you know, he probably is going to recover faster. But I agree with you. I mean, if I'm the coaching staff, and I, you know, they'll make the decision, but I would assume that they're super cautious with him coming back next year. I bet he does not see the field next year at all. You just, you know, maybe at the end practice him a little bit, but I just hate it for him because I know, you know, he tried to get perfectly ready for this season. You know, he wanted to come in those last four games and really make an impact, and so it's really tough to see that for him. And, you know, lots of prayers from me for him, because that can't be an easy situation for him to have to sit out a whole another year of football.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers with all the Holmes family, because that's rough. That's rough news, and especially with the level of excitement that they have, like many of the other players' parents do. But, you know, his dad's always on Twitter, and he's sticking up for Baylor or saying this or that, and just stinks, because I know how excited they were to get him back out there. So that was rough. Sounds like Josh Malin's barely playing on a knee that's functional right now. But he's out there playing. And, man, he talk about a guy who, man, if he had some health to him, could be really, really good for this team. He'd be one of them. I thought the O-line played well, though, this past Saturday. They're, you know, getting another start under Connor Galvin's belt. And Fru Morgan making the flip to the other side, a man in the right tackle spot rather than the left tackle spot like originally was thought. The O-line had one of its better games overall, I feel like, and most importantly, really kept the quarterbacks clean, which is, you know, not something that anyone should take for granted around here.
Yeah, and they ran the ball.
They ran the football
well. They ran the ball really, really well in that football game, and you're exactly right. I'm glad, you know, I finally thought about it, you know, during the media time to ask him about it, because, you know, with Pat Lawrence and Connor Galvin being the starters, it's kind of been like, you know, what's going on with Morgan and Malin after their early season injury. And so I'm glad we kind of finally got an answer on that. It seems like Malin is literally just going to come in when Galvin needs a break because he's so small, you know what I mean? He's still so young. And Malin came in and played well for the limited snaps he was in, and I think that's how we're going to see him all year. And that's really unfortunate because we heard, you know, pretty much all spring how good he was going to be at left tackle. And so that's kind of disheartening. And for Morgan, you know, he may not be starting this year, but he's still getting a lot of reps. And you know he's going to be the starter next year, you know, when Pat Lawrence moves on. And to see Connor Galvin grow up, you know, right before our eyes is really cool to see as well. You know, once he puts on the weight, he's going to be a heck of a football player. And so now you look, you know, you don't want to look towards next year because you're still in the middle of this season. But to see that those two guys are getting a lot of playing time and they're improving, mm-hmm. Is really big and really nice to see.
Yeah, it is. But now a much different challenge this week, or a much better challenge, let's face it. Although that Oklahoma State D-line was highly touted, they handled themselves pretty well. But Iowa State's defense as a whole is another matter. So Ames this Saturday. Grayson, what are you looking at as far as this matchup goes?
You know, you hit it on the head as far as a different kind of matchup. Oklahoma State is fantastic at rushing the quarterback. So if Baylor had gotten behind by too much, then we probably would have seen a whole lot of problems. But Oklahoma State wasn't able to pin their ears back all game because Baylor could run the ball on them. The complete opposite is probably going to happen in this Iowa State game. They have the best run defense in the Big 12, and they're 13th in the country in run defense. And, you know, they've already played Oklahoma. They played Iowa earlier in the season. They've played, you know, some good offenses that can run the football. And, you know, I watched their game against Texas Tech, a team that had been having a little bit of success running the football. And Iowa State was able to just rush three and put eight in the secondary because Tech couldn't run the ball at all in Ames. And so Baylor's going to have to find a way to run a little, just enough that they can't put eight guys in the secondary because that's so hard to throw against for any quarterback. So I'm looking at that matchup because we've seen Iowa State this year dominate some matchups up front. That West Virginia game comes to mind where they just dominated. And so Baylor can't allow that to happen. And that's the first matchup. That matchup right there is probably going to determine how well Baylor can fare in this game, because they're going to have to score a little bit. And if they can't move the ball at all, if they can't block up front, they're going to have a lot of trouble moving that football.
Yeah, I mean, it also eliminates explosive plays because now they're just key. That's what everybody defends Baylor with anyways. They wait to eliminate the explosive play, right? Or they look to eliminate the explosive play. Yeah, go ahead and try to put together a drive based on just solely rushing. We dare you. You're not going to do it. You don't do it against anybody. But last week, the explosive plays made a difference. And this is a team now that doesn't give up nearly as many as Oklahoma State does. So, yeah, that line matchup is highly, highly important.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And kind of moving on to another matchup I'm going to be looking at is, you know, we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, I mentioned when the play is there, Baylor has to go make that play. Mm-hmm. And I felt like Tech was able to hang around in that football game because they had players making plays. They had Antoine Wesley jumping over defenders and making tough catches. And the question is, can Denzel Mims do that? Can Jalen Hurd do that on the road, which has been an issue at times? They've had drop problems on the road all year long.
That's how West Virginia spiraled so out of control so quickly.
Yeah.
Was Mims and Hurd both not catching the football or having it bounce off their hands and turning into turnovers. I mean, that sequence of Charlie to Mims for a first down, he gets drilled and wasn't the same after that. Try to go to him again, you know, turns into a pick. Yeah, I mean, that whole sequence with Mims and Hurd there early on in West Virginia just kind of threw everything for a loop. And so, yeah, you gotta catch the football. You got to make plays, and you just got to limit the mistakes.
Yeah, and that's where you're going to be able to attack Iowa State, is throwing the football and making those big plays, because they're 54th in the country in pass defense. So clearly, you know, that's kind of, it's not even really a weakness. 54 is still solid. It's not that bad at all, especially when you're 13th in run defense and teams have to throw on you basically the whole game.
Well, and you're in the Big 12.
Yeah, and you're in the Big 12. So they're a good team. And like I said, Baylor's just going to have to make enough plays, because this game is really, in my opinion, going to be about Baylor's defense more than Baylor's offense. The offense will probably have to score in the 20s. But the defense has to be able to keep Iowa State below 30, I think, for Baylor to have any shot in this football game. And I think they can do that. I just don't know if they will.
Yeah, how much of a difference do you think Brock Purdy makes in this year's matchup?
a pretty big difference.
Yeah,
I would say
he's way better than anybody that's been out there for a while.
Yeah, and but one thing I will say is I think Iowa State's offensive line has taken a little bit of a step back. They're not really opening up the holes for Montgomery like they were a year ago. He has 741 total yards this season through eight games. Last year, he had 1,442 yards through 13 games. So I know he's got a chance to maybe make it up, but he's not on pace right now.
Well, he's also missed some time,
he
too.
He has, yeah. But in the games I've watched, teams have been able to stop the run a little bit. Tech was able to stop the run a little bit in that game, and I think Baylor can do that. But you are right. Brock Purdy, you know, unlike Kyle Kemp and unlike their other quarterback that transferred,
Zeb Nolan. Seneca Wallace.
Yeah, Seneca. Brock Purdy's going to take shots deep, and that's something that I think their offense has missed, that ability to throw it up, throw it deep, and now that's where you're seeing Hakeem Butler and his 24 yards per catch come to light. I mean, the guy is a deep threat like, you know, probably no one else in the conference, the way he does it. Obviously, Hollywood Brown does it a different way.
Sure.
But as far as being physical and going up and catching these ridiculous catches and then breaking tackles and making big plays. But, yeah, Brock Purdy gives them that element. He's also the best runner they've had at quarterback that we've probably seen in a while. He's second on the team in rushing. So that's going to be a problem for the Bears as well.
Yeah, they don't fare well against running quarterbacks typically. So – nice arm and leg threat here with Brock Purdy, although he's young. But, man, maybe if he was on the road, I'd feel a little bit better about being able to rattle him. But he's playing with such confidence right now. Montgomery, I mean, he's the real deal. He's just not been healthy the entire year, but he started to really turn it on. It feels like the last month or so. They've not only gotten him healthy, but they're just giving him more carries, and he's making the most of it. And Butler is a nightmare. I mean, that guy may be the best receiver in college football, arguably. He's definitely, I would think, the most under-the-radar wide receiver in college football at this point, because I don't really hear too many national analysts mentioning him when they mention the best receivers out there. Maybe they are now, and I certainly don't watch as much as the average guy does. But, I mean, I feel like he's not getting nearly enough the amount of love from what I've seen. So, yeah, that's a three-headed monster offensively that's going to be really tough for this Baylor defense that's still just kind of trying to figure things out.
Yeah, and you hit it on the head. I mean, Hakeem Butler leads the nation in yards per catch.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. He only has 33 catches, which is not an insane amount, but he has 791 yards. It's pretty remarkable for a guy of his size to be making this many big plays. And that's why I said, I mean, you know, when he goes up and catches that ball, if you can't stop him from catching it, then you better be able to make that tackle, or you're going to give up, you know, huge gain after huge gain and touchdown after touchdown. And so that's going to be really important for the Bears to kind of key in on. As far as Brock Purdy goes, I think you're right. You know, Baylor may have trouble rattling him, but I literally think they're going to have to. They're going to have to get pressure on him and going to have to make him uncomfortable, or else it's going to be really hard for them to compete in this game.
Sure.
And so I think Phil Snow's going to have to kind of figure out a game plan that allows them to blitz the quarterback a little bit without getting burnt too bad over the top. And, you know, they got to see Texas, and I believe those offenses are kind of similar. They have a lot of similar aspects to them. And so since they've already faced that before, I think if they can come out with a similar game plan, I think they could be able to hold that team, you know, hold this Cyclone team to, you know, under 30, and that would give them a chance.
Yeah, no, anything more than that, then forget about it, because they're not scoring 30-plus on that Iowa State defense. It's just not, and I don't care how many explosive plays you get. You need some special teams returns. You need
turnovers.
Yeah, a bunch of turnovers, short fields, things like that. Otherwise, on this defense, you're not going to do that. It was a relatively close game last year in Waco. You know, even in the midst of the losing streak and all of that, Baylor played pretty well in this game. So I think this is a team moving forward, as if Matt Campbell's got Iowa State, I think, pretty close to what his vision is already. I don't think they're ever going to just get way better players than they have right now. Like, I don't think they're ever going to ink 5-star receivers, but, you know, I think because they won so quickly with him, now in year three, that they took their lumps in year one like this Baylor football team did. They got a large step up, much larger than it was expected in year number two. And I think Baylor, you know, they get a couple wins here. They're basically matching what Iowa State did last year in year number two. But year three, they, you know, again, every time I mention, I have to mention, like, the weather delay to start the season was just really kind of strange. But I don't feel like they've followed up that campaign just as much as I thought they were going to. But they have, you know, really put it on some teams that, like West Virginia especially, that it goes to show you how good they really are and how good they really can be. So I don't think they're ultimately at his vision, but I think they're pretty dadgum close in their third year. I think you're seeing the same thing with Baylor football, and I think if you were to point at a team that, hey, this is what Matt Rule's ideal scenario for Baylor football would look like, I think a lot of Iowa State would be in there, like a whole lot of Iowa State, because he has a great deal of respect for Matt Campbell and just how they go about their business. Physical defense, explosive plays, you know, just tough and hard-nosed and don't quit. So I think this is kind of Baylor looking a little bit into the future, almost at what they could look like, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so as well. And, you know, Baylor being in Texas has the unique opportunity to probably have a more talented roster as well, which obviously helps in any situation.
And can be more explosive on offense. Definitely more explosive.
Yeah, but I agree with you. You know, a team that is built on defense is not like much we have seen in the Big 12. I would say the closest thing to resembling that is kind of what Gary Patterson has done at TCU.
And I think there's some things Gary does. I think you take the Iowa State and TCU programs.
And Texas now.
And
trying to trend that way.
Well, and it's starting to turn backwards a little bit. But, yeah, you're right, last year especially. But I think all those elements are what you'll eventually see Baylor football be about.
Yeah, and a run-first mindset. Mm-hmm. That leads to these big explosive plays that you see from, you know, Iowa State and TCU, not this year, but, you know, in recent years, you know, being able to throw the ball over the top of the defense because you run the ball so well. And so, yeah, definitely. I think this could be a team that, you know, Coach Rule is trying to, you know, take things from. And for sure on the defensive end, because I think most teams in the Big 12 would say Iowa State probably has the best defense in the Big 12 this season, and they probably were in the top two last year with Texas on defense as well. So, yeah, it's going to be a huge test, and Baylor hasn't seen a defense like this all year long. And so they're going to
win. Yeah, except for Oklahoma. Not really.
Or, yeah, West Virginia. Yeah, I mean, so this is going to be a huge test, and I'm very curious to see if Coach Snow and Coach Rule can come up with a game plan to keep this game close.
Yeah, and just try to remain even keel as fans out there, because, I mean, think about how low West Virginia was, and that's why I put that tweet out that night, was because it just felt like we were on this roller coaster ride, and that's the way the schedule's gone. But, you know, no matter what happens this weekend, it's not over again, and then you jump back next week, they beat TCU or something. Like, just it's unpredictable. It's a little wild just kind of how hot and cold this team can run, but I do think we'll see a better effort than we saw against West Virginia, and even if that wasn't so much effort, just a better showing than we saw against West Virginia. As long as they don't get too overwhelmed early, you know, Chris Platt's not dropping a kick when things are already starting to steamroll a little bit. If you can avoid those types of mistakes, and I'm not trying to single him out by any means, but that's just the play I think of when I go, like, oh, okay, this game's already over. This game's like they're not coming back in this one. That was the one to me. Do you want to get us some questions for this week?
Let's do it. All right. Yeah, let's do it.
Alpha Needle, what happened to the Matt Rule? Man, a lot of people have asked about the Matt Rule penalty this week, and I guess no one's seen anyone's answers, not just on the board, but on my show, on Twitter. What happened to the Matt Rule penalty on Saturday? He was arguing with the refs for a long time. What was he saying? What did he do to get the penalty? I believe he's arguing whether the kick went in or not, because it looked like from a certain angle, it looked like it may have grazed over the top, but maybe that was me thinking of the wrong play.
Yeah, I think the penalty was the Vaughns.
No, that was targeting. I'm thinking that he was arguing for a long time on that first missed field goal, so I think he may have thought it actually went in, but the wind was so loopy out there that he probably just saw wrong. But yeah, you're right. It was the Vaughns play.
Yeah, and I have no idea what he said, but I can imagine that he. You know, for me, from what I took from it was, okay, maybe it wasn't targeting, but that was a penalty. I mean, I don't know what the exact call is, but I'm pretty sure when the quarterback still has the ball in his hands, you can't just go hit a defender, because he wasn't right at the line of scrimmage. He was about 3 yards or 4 yards off. I don't think that's legal. Maybe I'm off on the rules, but he hit him and Cornelius still had the ball for another 2 seconds. So my guess would be he was probably arguing that it should have been a penalty regardless of if it was targeting or not.
Right.
It should have been a penalty no matter what. And, yeah, it wasn't targeting. I went back and looked at it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. It was just it seemed
a brutal hit.
Yeah, it was a brutal hit. And, you know, Vaughn's was laying on the ground, and it might have just been rule, you know, standing up for his player. And I can tell you one thing. After he got that penalty, the dynamic of that stadium mm-hmm. and of that team changed. So I actually thought it was, you know, turned out being a pretty good penalty, I think.
Yeah, sometimes coaches do that intentionally, right? And I think he wasn't sitting there going, I'm going to do this so that this happens. I think he's just doing what you said. He was sticking up for his player. But there's no doubt that I think a fan base, that if they've seen another score, maybe already starts leaving because that's just how it is now. Instead, is like, you know what? Screw this. We're going to, you know, batten down the hatches and go in this game and fight. And I think that definitely spread throughout the team. And he's talked before about how he's like had to sometimes just back off the referees because he feels like it has an effect on the team, you know, that maybe it can start getting into like, well, man, we're not getting any breaks, or we're not, just a frustration level that I don't think instead of that setting in, just turned into motivation and definitely paid off for them. We're all in the dark on injuries. Maybe intentionally his rule doesn't want to tip his hand. That's exactly what it is. He's not hiding anything. It's that he don't want to tell Matt Campbell this week, hey, Charlie Brewer's got an ankle injury that's limited him to one practice, and like he just doesn't. He wants to see somebody if they can play. It's not going to be determined until Friday anyway, so it's not hiding them by any means. But what is really happening with Harrison Hand, Graylin Arnold, and Fruit Morgan? Is it really nagging injuries, or is it more? What is the real prognosis for them to come back at full strength? I mean, it's nagging injuries. If it was more, they'd shut them down and have surgeries on them. But it's just nagging injuries. Now Graylin Arnold. Sounds like they're going to shut him down as far as this year goes, which we already talked about. Harrison Hand, he says, like 50-50 to play. He was sure bouncing around and the celebration of that win, looking really healthy. And Fruit Morgan, I mean, that's just been constant since the moment he got here, basically. Like his first or second practice, he got dinged up, and he's been dinged up ever since then. So it's nagging injuries. Arnold, again, will redshirt. Hand, I have no idea, maybe plays this weekend. Sounds like it's a week-to-week thing with him, and Fruit Morgan's going to play. So, yeah, that's what I've got on that for Alpha Needle.
Yeah, and I think so. I mean, if you're trying to get specific on injuries, so I do want to mention Xavier Jones did play this week finally, and I believe he was in concussion protocol. So he finally came back and got cleared and got healthy. So he's back. Harrison Hand, I believe it's still a nagging hamstring, is what I believe it was originally. I'm not sure if it has changed since then, but that's what I believe it to be. Grayland is the high ankle sprain, which we know is tough to come back from. Xavier Newman is doing it, but I think Grayland's may have been worse. And so, like we talked about earlier, they could use him, but they have decent depth at cornerback with Derek Thomas still there. And so I think they'll be okay there. And then for Morgan, he mentioned it today. That, you know, he's not quite 100%, and he's better at the right tackle position, which they have Patrick Lawrence. So they don't need him to, you know, be out there every single play, and that's fine. He's getting a learning experience. He hadn't played football in a long time. This is his first year, you know, playing in a while, and so, you know, he's just getting his feet under him. And yeah, that's about all I have on the injuries. I think right now, I think Kyle Boyd is still out.
Yeah, it's still concussion protocol.
Yeah.
But, hey, compared to the injuries last year, I mean, it's night and day. What round do you predict Hurd will be drafted in the NFL? Haven't given it any thought whatsoever. I'll say, like, fourth round or something. I mean, I have no idea. Do you have any sort of an idea on that?
I don't.
I just don't. I mean, there's so much to see before then as far as, like, pro days and what teams are even looking for or where they even see him playing, because I don't think everybody's going to see him as a receiver, nor is everybody going to see him as a running back. And he's kind of he's more of a receiver now, but he's still he still has plenty of running back in him, and we see that, especially in short yardage situations. So I have no idea what a tweener guy like that, what the typical average round would even be.
Yeah, I think if he goes to the combine and he's 6'4", 225, and he runs a sub 4.5, which I believe he will, then, I mean, he won't. I don't think he'll go any later than the fifth round. I think he could sneak all the way into maybe the fourth, maybe the third.
Yeah, I'm looking at fourth, fifth round kind of.
The only reason I say that is because, you know, he switched positions. But you look in the NFL and – you know, they're cool with giving handoffs to receivers. They're cool with, you know, experimenting with different things. And, you know, I watched the Patriots this weekend, and Cordarrelle Patterson got put in at running back, a dude that, you know, hasn't really played much running back at all, and he's going out there getting 10 yards a pop. And so I think Jalen Hurd is a special athlete, and he will get drafted. I'm not 100% sure where, but I think it's clear he still has some things to improve upon if he does want to play receiver at the next level, but he's definitely getting the coaching to try to make that happen.
Yep. So appreciate those questions there from you, Alpha Needle. I do appreciate that. SA Baylor fan, the option pass play that Bohannon ran against Oklahoma State, is wearing 17 instead of 11. In the past, when I've seen players change jerseys, it's typically an O-lineman becoming eligible for a play. What are the rules, if any, around in-game jersey changes? And Nate Smith's question was basically the exact same as that, as far as could you answer a rules-related question? PA announcer call out Pooh Strickland's name. So that's the same question there. So rules-related question there on the jersey change.
I'm not sure exactly what the exact rule is on it. We'll get you an answer here in a sec. But I know that, it was weird to see that. It was weird to see them switch his number to 17, which, of course, is Pooh Strickland's number. But I'm not sure exactly why they did that.
I think it was to trick them, obviously. I mean, That was the goal, was to trick them. But the play didn't exactly work out the way that they were hoping that it was going to. Mm-hmm. But, I think it was just to catch them off guard. And when it happened, like, that clearly was not Pooh Strickland based on the size. So I'm sitting there pointing to the guys in the press room going, is that Gary Bohannon? They're like, no, he wears, whatever, 18. And that's 15.
It was 17, and he typically wears 11, I believe.
Okay, so I'm way off.
Yeah, no, but you're exactly right. I think it could have just been a trick thing, and they were able to do it. I saw him out there, and I was like, that's definitely Gary Bohannon. And someone commented in the game day thread that he thought it was Pooh Strickland because of the number. That was really bizarre, and I'm not exactly sure on the specifics of it. I think it might have just been a trick type thing.
Yep. And Nate, one part of his question that is asking about the jersey number, but my question is switching numbers mid-game. I'm assuming the trick play that I referenced wasn't actually Pooh, but it was Gary. When you talk about the I might as well just read the question because I'm not summarizing it very well. During Saturday's game, a play where his wide receiver reversed. Receiver appeared to be thinking about throwing, pulled it down, scampered before going out of bounds. PA announcer called out Pooh's name. He saw 17, didn't think anything of it. Said he listened to Smokey with Rule. They had Bohannon. Yes, Bohannon was on that play, to answer your question. That was Bohannon in Strickland's jersey number again.
Yeah, and I kind of, you know, saw that play in practice. Weird as that sounds, I saw them running it. Yeah, and I was kind of like, I bet they're going to run that in this game. I kind of had a feeling it was coming, and then they ran it, and of course, you know, Tyquan kind of got jammed at the line and couldn't get out of the mess. But really interesting play call, and I think it might have actually worked if they were able to get outside and make that happen. And then, of course, they had the trick play with Drew Gaelitz as well, rolling out, and he had guys wide open and couldn't quite convert. But, yeah, interesting to see Coach Rule bringing out the trick plays, as he pretty much does every game. You know, at least one a game is what it seems like.
Yeah, and I don't have a quick answer for you. Typically, changing jersey numbers on a game day is a violation. It's a penalty. But I don't know if you sneak it through. And I've seen teams do that before. Other teams do that before. But I don't know the exact. Maybe an official on the board can answer that for us and have more clarity there. Sorry about that.
Yeah, or maybe a jersey ripped or something. You never really know. Thanks for the question, Nate. Barely heard from. Of Smokey and Harry Johnson fought, if Smokey and Harry Johnson fought, how quick would HJ cry?
Like a minute and a half. I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know old HJ all that well, so I'm not going to pick a fight winner only knowing one side of things, but I'll go Smokey and, under 2 minutes most likely.
I have no idea. Yeah. So I'll just go with Smokey.
I get it that HJ is a crier, apparently, and maybe I'm missing on that, because how fast – you don't ask that of somebody who's super tough, is how fast do they cry. Yeah. So under 2 minutes seems pretty on point. Baron Glades was a response to Nate's question about the jersey numbers and mentioned that Tech did it to Baylor back in 2012. Best week ever. Now that it's closer to the end of the season, who do you think is going to get drafted from our team, and which round will they get drafted?
Okay.
Jalen Hurd.
Jalen Hurd is one. Again, not 100% sure which round, but we'll just put a number. I would say 4th through 6th probably at this point, but he's probably the best athlete on the team that I can think of. I don't think Chris will get drafted. I think Ira could, but he's going to have to play a lot better down the stretch. He doesn't quite have the production this year, but he is a 3-year starter and a guy that has a good size.
So many guys with good size and so many guys who are multi-year starters. I think you always overvalue those who you're seeing all the time. And that's like when, Graylin Arnold may leave after his junior year, or, this guy's going to get drafted. I mean, we did that a lot with Browse guys thinking there. I mean, Andrew Billings, he's a first-round pick, and he was a fourth-round pick. So Ira Lewis, I mean, maybe he gets a chance just based off hard work and the size like you mentioned, but I mean, I think most everybody on this team right now that's draft eligible anytime soon is all late round picks, and I don't even know how many of them there really are.
Yeah, I'm just looking at trying to think of names possibilities, that could possibly, like Derek Thomas,
but there
maybe.
Derek Thomas I could see because his size is ideal for what the NFL's doing
and
now.
And it all kind of depends on, they got to run well. That's the thing. They got to show up at the combine and do it, or show up at pro day and do it. And if Derek Thomas goes out and runs, a 4.5, I mean, yeah, he's getting drafted at 6.3. He might even be earlier than we think if you're out there running that, because corner is such a premium position. But I think the best pro prospect on this team is James Lynch, and he's not eligible, of course.
Yeah, for a while.
So, He's probably the best pro prospect. I think Mims would get drafted if he left, but I don't think it would be 7th round.
He better put on about 20 pounds of muscle.
Yeah.
Because we've seen Corey Coleman, who had a much better physique than Denzel.
And a much better career.
We saw him go and just flail. That wasn't just being big enough or whatever. I mean, Corey didn't have the height, but he was big enough for, he just didn't click, and he didn't work hard apparently enough and didn't have a great attitude and whatever else. Denzel's nowhere close to Corey Coleman, so I think he's a no-doubter. He's got to come back. I'm not saying he's coming back. I'm saying he's got to come back for this team to be what they want to be and for himself to be what he wants to be. I think anything other than that, not that he's even debating it right now, but I just know how, like I said, how we kind of get with guys. Denzel, a possibility, but I think he'd have to show that he can be in late in games and not be on the sideline when they need him in Austin to go win a game perhaps, and that he's more of the guy we saw on Saturday, that even though we didn't see him before that, we did see him make the biggest play when it mattered, and he made a very tough catch too. That's typically a ball that probably gets knocked away from him 9 times out of 10 until Saturday when he made that play with his hands and his body, and even did so with some physicality coming down. So to answer your question, I mean, Jalen Hurd, and I'm not ready to say anybody else, maybe Derek Thomas. But anybody else, I have no idea of any sure things whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking, do you think that if Blackmar and Lawrence continue to improve that maybe they could get a look? No chance? Even Lawrence at guard?
I don't know.
Don't know?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot. It's definitely going to take a lot. We're probably reaching.
There's just so many guys that are out there. I mean, think about all the college football teams at every level, and they all have 5, 10, 15 guys, it's so much harder than we could even imagine. So, yeah, I doubt it. I mean, opportunity in a free agent camp, sure. Maybe that happens. But as far as they're going to get drafted, I say Jalen Hurd and then maybe Derek Thomas for your question there, Nate.
Yeah, so thanks for the question. Last question, USNA 82. I don't think Harrison Han was on the redshirt list that was being maintained on this site. He has been out a great deal this year, and I saw him being the sideline cheerleader on Saturday, pumping the players up. How many games has he played in this year, and is he close to being eligible to redshirt? How many players on the roster have been out of concussion protocol this year? How are we trending with the new helmets, better or worse over the previous year? And then don't you think Baylor needs a big bass drum in that band with BU on the side, Sailor Bear on the other? They need to take it with the Tubas on the Baylor line in the second half. It needs to be Texas big. And, yeah, I do think that that would be kind of cool to have a big old drum like that.
I think that'd it sounds like what fun. Texas yeah. does, though. <It'd be laughs> That's the problem.
Them a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think it would be pretty pretty cool to see, no doubt. As far as concussions go, the ones we've heard about are Kyle Boyd, Xavier Jones, Charlie Brewer. Anyone else that you can think of? Those were the three that came to my mind. Did anyone else have one early?
Same.
Oh, again. John Lovett. John Lovett.
Yeah, John Lovett had one till last week.
Yeah, yeah. I think those. Are
you
the
mentioned
four.
Kyle Boyd, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Those are the four that yeah. pop out.
And Boyd, Lovett, and Jones are the only ones that missed significant playing time. Obviously, Brewer mm-hmm. just played in a week, so he was fine. And as far as from last year, I don't remember exactly how many guys had concussions last year. I don't know the exact number off the top of my
head. They were also
hurt
with other things. It was hard to even realize exactly. who had a concussion. I mean, I think probably everybody on that team had a concussion at some point or another. Not trying to make light of it. It was just it's like everybody was hurt. Everybody was banged up. Everybody was getting beat up and bullied and out-physicaled by the teams they faced last year. That's where we've seen a tremendous difference, I feel like. But, yeah, don't have a number on the concussions. I can't – again, there were so many injuries that I can't even remember even talking about concussions, quite frankly. But I would imagine it's probably about the same. I think that those helmets don't stop concussions. They can help prevent them, but they don't stop them dead in their tracks and prevent them from ever happening again. So that's just still going to come with playing the game of football. But those four are the four that we can – best say and say for sure.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the participation sheet, and it looks like Harrison Hand has played in six games this year, so he's not going to be able to be eligible to redshirt, which is unfortunate because mm-hmm. in a lot of those games it felt like maybe he was only in for a play or, you know, not very much. And so it would have been nice, but yeah, he's not going to get a redshirt this year, it doesn't look like.
I wonder how they handle that. If they, I mean, because you can't really afford to go get it next year from him when he'd be a junior. But man, that stinks. Because you wish, if anything, it'd be a Graylin Arnold situation and save a year for him. He had to play last year. I mean, that was obvious. But yeah, six games. It doesn't seem like that at all. Doesn't seem like that at all as far as Harrison Hand goes. But it's just kind of a year that's been for him, I guess.
Yeah, it's been a quiet year for him, and just one where he hasn't been able to stay healthy. And it's really unfortunate because we know the kind of athlete he is and the kind of player he is. You know, he played really well as a true freshman last year, and so they could have used him in a couple of games. And who knows, maybe he gets healthy and gets to play this week. If not, then he'll probably be ready for TCU, I would think, at this point. But kind of just hoping now that he's able to get it back. But so that's all pretty much for the mailbag. Do you want to go ahead and get into some pick'em?
Yeah, some let's get into pick'em? Some pick'ems.
Okay, so the first game on Saturday, TCU, who got a big win over Kansas State by 1 point.
By missed extra point.
Yeah, really, really bad game. Not a fun one to watch at all. They're traveling to Morgantown to take on West Virginia.
Bye, Felicia.
Who is coming off of probably, I think they would probably say their biggest win of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Going to Austin, getting the win in such dramatic fashion, making Tom Herman extremely upset and
borderline
sensitive.
Crying.
Borderline crying. They made a grown man cry what in Austin. Was. And so that's who TCU's got, and I do not foresee good things in their future. What do you think?
I think it'll be interesting to see how TCU's defense does against Jennings and Greer and that whole group. That was just such an impressive comeback by West Virginia. Not that they were – I mean, that game was just back and forth the entire way, but when it looked like it was probably over, just that throw in the back of the end zone. I mean, in the catch as well, you got to give both guys credit. Just absurd. I've never – hardly seen any plays ever made like that in a game like that, in a situation like that. And then dealing with all the timeouts and the two-point conversion and still converting. Just beautiful job by Dana Holgorsen, man. So at some point, I think West Virginia's got to kind of like catch their breath and maybe not play as sharply. TCU seems like it would be a team that they typically be up for, but maybe this year they're looking at the record a little bit. Having said that, I still expect West Virginia to win this game comfortably. But maybe TCU's defense can make it interesting. I just don't know how TCU's offense is going to do anything in this game. So Mountaineers by at least a couple of scores.
Yeah, I think we're kind of starting to see two teams separate themselves in the Big 12. I think it's becoming pretty obvious that it's Oklahoma and West Virginia, and that's kind of going to stink for West Virginia because they're going to have to play Oklahoma the last week of the year and then play them again the very next week. And so that's not exactly ideal. That's kind of just how the schedule worked out this year. And that'll be interesting to see, you know, the rematch a week later to see that. I got West Virginia win this game by at least three scores.
At least three.
Yeah. I don't know if it's three touchdowns. But
okay. Yeah.
Maybe I'll say something like maybe 17, but I think they're going to put up, you know, maybe 37-20.
And TCU, unless they just hit on some trick plays or hit on some just big explosive plays, they're not going to score more than a couple touchdowns.
Yeah, I might even be generous there. Actually, you know what? Yeah, 37-14. I don't trust that offense. I don't know, especially in Morgantown. It might be cold there, something they're not used to. The next game, big rivalry game. Huge rivalry game between the two worst teams in the Big 12 right now.
Come from the same state.
Kansas and Kansas State. Showdown in Manhattan. K-State's the home team. Both teams trending in the wrong direction. One RA fired their coach. One looks like their coach may be on the way out. What do you think?
I think Kansas State wins this game because they're just slightly better. They're probably a lot more than slightly better, actually, just because Kansas is such a free fall. But KU, now David Beatty's kind of the... I would think that those players already loved him and everything, but now that he's basically, you know, saying, all right, I've been fired, but I'm still going to stick around for another month just to coach you guys and make the transition easy for you, I think they're going to play really hard for him, and I think they have been playing hard for him, but especially this week, and they see that, hey, their big rival is a wounded duck. So I expect this to actually be a pretty competitive game, but gosh, it's really weird, too, because I'm having trouble even making myself say I think K-State's still going to pull this one out because I don't know. I'll roll with that, but I think this is a tight football game, and if Kansas were to somehow get the upset here, which they very well could, I mean, you beat TCU, you can beat K-State, but that's the end of Bill Snyder for sure, if they were to lose to Kansas. I mean, that's the end, and I think the end's already coming down the train tracks right now anyways, but I'll go K-State. Simply because they're at home and they're slightly better, but that's an interesting matchup, I guess.
Yeah, I think K-State's just the better football team.
Yeah.
They've been in most of their games outside of that Oklahoma just destruction. They've been in all their games. They've pulled off a couple wins. I think they actually beat Kansas pretty good. I think Kansas is not – they're just wounded. They're not – I don't think they're going to be able to show up in any game going forward, and they have a tough schedule remaining with Oklahoma looming. So
there's no doubt, just no distractions involved. I think K-State – whoops them, but just with everything in play. Although KU may feel like instead of rallying for David Beatty, they'll attempt to and just maybe not have the emotion, knowing that it's kind of futile to do that. Is that the right word? Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah.
But you know, who knows these two teams? I mean, quite frankly, because they play up and down to their competition every week. K-State had that game against Texas where they get shut out and then go on and score 17 straight, whatever it was. Again, losing a close game there. A lot of their losses are close losses in weird ways. So, yeah, I'll go with the Wildcats.
Yeah, and they beat Oklahoma State. They destroyed Oklahoma State.
That's right. So, Alex Barnes should have a big day.
I think they'll win this game 30-10, 30-13, something like that. I think they're just better. A really good matchup in Norman. Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, another big rivalry. In-state, it's kind of the week of in-state rivalries with Kansas, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, OU, and then Texas and Texas Tech. But OU appears to be rolling. It seems like they figured it out after losing Rodney Anderson. At least offensively, they have. The defense definitely took another step back against Tech. They gave up a ton of points.
They're not physical.
Yeah, some really
They're
questionable
soft.
Calls in that game, though, I felt like went Tech's
against
way.
Oklahoma more so than Tech. Yeah, because there was one early on against Tech that that you could really complain about, but there were way more that went against Oklahoma that are just like...
And they were
you?
Huge.
Yeah, they're all 15-yard penalties. The Rambo.
One was a pick in the end zone where TJ Vasher just fell on the ground. That game was not a five-point game. That game was a three-touchdown game that I felt like the refs played an impact
they
in.
And
so OU was better, but they still would have given up 40 points, so they still weren't great on defense.
Kyler Murray let them have 14 right away, basically. I mean, he gave him two picks, just terrible decisions. And then he finally settled down. But, yeah, between the two gimmies early on in that game and then the officiating was so atrocious. And they absolutely were keeping Tech in that ball game. That was not indicative, I think, if you saw them match up most of the time. Yeah. So having said all that, I'm going to go with Oklahoma over Oklahoma State. Because of the way OU's playing, I still am not convinced on that defense. I still think they're soft, and you can run through their tackles and make some big plays on them. I think Oklahoma State's going to be jacked up for this game coming off the Baylor loss now. They've tasted the high and the low in a two-week span, but it's in Norman. OU's got a lot riding on this, so I'm going to go with the Sooners.
I think this is a closer-than-expected game for most of it, and then I think Oklahoma's able to pull away a little bit. I don't see Oklahoma State being able to stop OU from running the ball whenever they want, and the problem with that is you keep giving up big runs. Eventually, you're going to give up big plays in the passing game. I think Oklahoma State will be able to move the ball, but my best guess on this score, I think it'll be something like 49-34, 49-31, something like that. But OU will just continue to roll. Another in-state matchup, Texas travels to Texas Tech, and they're going to have to face that crowd, that atmosphere in Lubbock on a night game, just like OU did. And OU was able to survive. What do you think? Does Texas rebound after losing to West Virginia, or does the Lubbock crowd give Tech a win? And this is a matchup that Tech has been able to win recently, even though they haven't had great years.
Who's playing quarterback for Tech? Because that's my decision right there. Then Texas probably wins this game. I am not impressed at all by Jet Duffy. I'm not even all that impressed by his running ability, quite frankly. I know he can break off a big run here and there, but he's nowhere close to being what he needs to be as a passer. I think that's why they've been so hesitant to put him in games, but they had to. They really had no choice last week with Bowman going down. If Bowman was playing in this game and was healthy, I'd go Tech all day. But the fact that it's probably going to be Jet Duffy, and Texas is really desperate for a win now after taking a couple of losses. I think the Longhorns roll in there, and I mean, don't run away with it by any means. But I think they're gonna bounce back against Tech. That's a really hard game to call, though. But ultimately, it boils down to Tech's quarterback. I just don't trust Jet Duffy to beat Texas, even if it is in Lubbock.
Yeah, Kingsbury has kind of had their number a little bit since he's been at Tech. My concern, first of all, with Bowman, my best guess is I think they are probably going to shut him down for the year.
They're not acting like it.
Lungs, yeah. But I mean, for a freshman to be taking the kind of beating he's clearly taking,
and all it takes is a knee to the side, as we saw on Saturday.
Yeah, and he's back in the hospital for three more days. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that's responsible if you keep throwing him in the game like that, and he barely gets hit, and he's got a collapsed lung again. So I don't know how much we're going to see of him moving forward. I'm curious. I actually think that there's a chance that McLean Carter might play in this game. I think he's finally healthy, maybe. And he's not great by any means, but he was their starter at the beginning of the year. I think he gives them a better chance to win this game than Duffy does.
Oh, I agree with that.
And so I'm curious about that, but I do think Texas finds a way to rebound. I think they'll be ready to go in this football game. I don't think Texas is a very good football team. I think Baylor should have beaten them early in the year, and I think we're finally seeing why they should have beaten them, because Texas really is not that good. But I think they'll find enough plays on offense against kind of, a Tech defense that's really beat up. I got Texas winning this game something like 38-27.
If you can just limit your turnovers against this Tech defense, they're not that impressive. And Dakota Allen's banged up playing with the cast, but everybody goes gaga over this. His defense is so much better. It's just they get a lot of turnovers, so it makes it, like, in my opinion, and I'm sure that S11 could break it down and tell you all the reasons why they're so much better and everything, but every time I've watched them, I've never gone like, wow, they're a really good coverage team, or they're really good at getting to the passer. I never say those things. They make a play from time to time, but mostly it's just they get turnovers, and they, but then when it turns into a game where both defenses are sieves, they lost out to a better offense last week, bottom line, and it shouldn't have been as close as it was. So, yeah, I think if Alan Bowman was playing this game, though, I would feel a lot differently than I do. But I'm in agreement. I think you got to see some McLean Carter, because Jet Duffy was nothing impressive last week, or really any time I've watched him.
Yeah, for sure. So both of us picking Texas.
Texas by like 7 to 10 points, somewhere along there.
It's going to be tricky, no doubt. That crowd's going to be jacked up just like they were a week
ago.
And if
they lose again, watch out.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, Herman won't be on a hot seat or anything, but it would just be fun to watch him squirm.
Yeah, so now the game of the week, as usual, Baylor travels to Ames, coming off the big win, big homecoming win, and Iowa State coming off a win over Kansas that they kind of just coasted to a win there. What are your thoughts? Do you think Baylor goes in there and gets their first road win against a ranked team under Rule?
No, I don't. I think Iowa State wins this game. I'm not getting nearly as of a bad feeling about it being a blowout, even though West Virginia was only a couple of weeks ago. I think Baylor's going to keep it close, and I think they could even play a tight game, but I just don't. You know, I said last week, and I predicted Oklahoma State, I just didn't feel like this team was ready to go win a close game like that, and, you know, just they're too inconsistent. I think they'll be more consistent looking this week, but I also think they're going up against a much better team in a really hard place to play, or a better team in a harder place to play. And so I'm going with the Cyclones, and what I'm going to say I believe will be a respectable game, and certainly not one where they're leaving like they left Morgantown, but probably lose by, you know, a couple scores.
I think this game will be very identical to the Texas game. I think Baylor will have moments where they show life and show that, you know, they can move the ball a little bit, and then they'll have stretches where they just can't go anywhere, and they're going to rely on their defense a whole lot to keep them in this game. And I think it'll be a really competitive game. I really, really do. I believe that. And I think Baylor really shows up. This is their final chance to go on the road against a ranked team. I think, you know, they're going to be a little more confident this week after being Oklahoma State. I, you know, this was a game, you know, over the past couple weeks where I've been thinking Baylor could maybe pull off the upset. I don't know why. I just think it's a good matchup. But, you know, looking at it and just kind of doing more research on it, I think Iowa State wins this game. I'm going to, you know, my score is 27-20. Last week I predicted Baylor to win 34-31, and I was pretty close on that one. So hoping
Thanks,
that it
Gundy.
Carries over to this week and hopefully that it, you know, does stay close, because I think Baylor does need a good showing, you know, on the road against a ranked team. So yeah, 27-20 is what I think I'm going with.
I agree with needing a good showing. I agree that it'll be somewhat low scoring in comparison to what, especially like Oklahoma, Texas Tech and those kind of crazy. It won't be a shootout, I don't think. I think it's going to be all about who's got the most explosive plays and who's just able to limit the damage on defense. And maybe Baylor can get a special teams play in there, like they have been over the last few games that have been difference makers for them. But, yeah, 1-2 scores. I definitely see your scenario, though, Baylor playing it close, playing it tight like they did against Texas, because I think these are the teams they're going to match up the best with moving forward. I think they're always going to have a little bit more of a hard time with an Oklahoma or a Texas Tech and less of a hard time with the teams that aren't trying to score 60 on six plays. And Iowa State fits that bill, although they are more explosive now than they have been. And it's going to be a huge, huge test, but yeah, we both take Cyclones, but in relatively close games.
Yeah.
All right,
absolutely.
Man. Anything else you got for this week?
No, nothing really. You know, of course, Baylor basketball starting to get things rolling, so we'll be covering them, you know, in later episodes probably. But yeah, that's pretty much the main thing. You know, this is the best time of the year. College basketball, college football, NFL, NBA, all going on at the same time. Really nice to see sports on every night.
It is. It's a blast. It's good to see that win last weekend. Keep the podcast all positive and Baylor fans all positive, at least for a week. And we'll see what happens in Ames on Saturday. Either way, we'll be back next week with another edition of the Fast Friday Podcast. I'm Craig Smoke for Grayson Grundhafer. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening. This has been the Fast Friday Podcast on Sikkim365.com.